Hi there, and welcome to our, what is it, September care call. How to go from control freak to care freak. This is a topic near and dear to my heart because so often I think we actually confuse care and control. And they can look similar and be similar. So what we're going to do today is really, hold on one second, is suss all that out. We're going to look at where we feel controlled and rigid in our life. We are going to kind of unravel why it is that we do it. Why is it that we lean towards control? We're going to look at the differences between control and care and then lay out some key steps on what to do when we feel like this has to go a certain way and it's not going our way. All right, so before we do any of that, let's just take a moment to arrive. So do me a favor and close your eyes and place one hand on your heart and one hand on your belly. And just get here. Arriving in this body. Arriving in this moment. Nowhere to go. Nothing to do. But be here. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. And as I'm seeing people hop on the call, please, in the chat box, give me your name. Tell me where you're coming from. You know, where are you? And, you know, what you're excited about. Because these care calls are, they're open to the community. They are free. They are about building resources around what I believe is one of the most important things that we can do for our life, which is care for ourselves. Because when we care for ourselves, that love, that understanding, that compassion reaches out into all aspects of our life. So who am I and why am I even talking about this? If you don't know me, my name is Jamie Greenwood. I am a health and life coach and recovering control freak. And I say recovering because it's still, hey, Allie. Allie says, good morning. Grateful to be here. I say recovering because it is always a process. And this is another thing about control freaks is we like to think that like once we do it and then we're done, we can just check it off our list. But usually not. Usually things come back and we're constantly circling and we're constantly working with whatever feels difficult in our life. And control for me is definitely one of those things that I really have to notice. Am I trying to control the situation or am I allowing what's here to kind of unfold at its own pace? And, you know, where I have a history of getting controlling is with my food and with my body, and experienced anorexia when I was a teenager and then became orthorexic in my early 20s. If you don't know about orthorexia, it's an obsession with health. So you're eating, but you only like eat kale and green juice and, you know, pristine coconut oil. And you know, just everything is so controlled. I was very controlling around my exercise. It needed to look a certain way. And if I didn't sweat enough, it didn't count. And the thing about whether you find yourself controlling your food or your body, or you find yourself controlling your relationships or attempting to control your children, we're just needing everything to be a certain way. the problem with that is that it's like a house built on quicksand, because everything is always shifting and everything is always changing. And one of the things that I've noticed in my work over the last 12 years is the ways in which we live on lockdown, the ways in which we attempt to use control as a way to believe that we're good. If I eat a certain way, I'm good. If I weigh a certain amount, I'm good. If I accomplish a certain task at work, I'm good. We're only as good as what we can control. And yet, we really can't control very much because it's always shifting, which causes anxiety and causes us to flip out and then lock down even harder. So you can see what the cycle looks like. And so what I want you to do as we kind of settle into this theme of control versus care is just take a moment, and I want you to think about where in your life are you currently living on lockdown? Where in your life do you feel rigid and controlled and like you need things to be a certain way? If it doesn't go this way, it is not going to be okay. What is this area in your life? I'd love you to share it right in the chat box. What's the primary area of your life that feels like it's being lived on lockdown? I just had a conversation yesterday with a client who, for her, it's her career. She wants to be moving up and she feels like she's attempting to control every little aspect of it to get it. And yet what we're working with is the reality that there are other people up for the position. And we have no idea if she's going to be able to get it. But in the meantime, she's attempting to control and driving herself crazy to do everything right. And that's another, for those of you who are still thinking and getting ready to share what feels like you're controlling, anything that you think has to be, that there's a right way to do it, you know, that you have to do it the right way, that's control. That's control. Because there's often a preferred way, but not always a right way. Okay, Ali says, my body, my children, my husband, ugh. I know, right? I know, when we are control freaks, which it took me years to even admit it, that I really liked to control. I would say I'm not a control freak. I just like things a certain way. Right. We see it in every aspect of our lives. It begins to touch everywhere. Danielle says, organization in the house. Right. It needs to be this way. So as you begin to sit with what feels like you have to control, now I want you to ask yourself, what does it feel like in your body? What does it feel like in your body when you are attempting to control this thing? And what's the general impact on your life and the people around you? What impact does your need for control have on your physicality, on how you feel, and the people in your life? Ali says, I get into the zone and I think it's isolating. Yes, control can create disconnection. Disconnection from ourselves and disconnection from the people around us. And when I say disconnection from ourselves, you know, often we're like, no, I'm connected to myself. This is what I want. we're being run by old stories of how things should be. So you're not actually connected to what you want from a place that feels good and true, but you're doing what you think you should. And that's very different. When we're running our life on shoulds, that's not connection, that's disconnection. Because we're running our life from ways in which we were told things have to be, whether that was from our parents or ideas we have on our own or culture. I'm sitting with what Danielle shared around organization in the house. My car is filthy right now, to the point where I'm really working with like shame around how filthy my car is. And like I had to take my car yesterday, and a stranger had to get in it and like help me install a new car seat for my child. And it took all of my willpower to not apologize for my car. And then I realized I don't have to apologize for my car. It's a wreck, but I don't have to be upset by that. I can just let it be a wreck. And I actually ended up making a joke, and she was like, oh no, my car's way worse. So we kind of shared our disorganization, filthy car shame. And then I was able to let it go. Versus as I was driving there, I could feel myself getting very rigid and tight because I wanted to control the situation and control my car looking filthy. So, yeah. So settling into, you know, what is the general impact of ourselves in our life? Yeah, Danielle writes, so much shame. You know, who knew a dirty house could cause so much shame? And what does that shame do to us? It isolates. It separates. It shuts us down. It makes us edgy, very, very edgy. Danielle says, it drives me insane. Yeah. Yeah. Because when we're flooded with shame, there's no safe place to be. And when we've connected our shame to control, the only way we get to be free is if we then lock down even harder and quote unquote do better. Have a cleaner house, have a thinner body, eat the, you know, as healthy as possible, have children that get straight A's, have children that don't have meltdowns. Oh my God, find me one of those. It just separates us more and more, which is the opposite of how we want to be feeling. We want to feel connected and loved and loving, which is the opposite when we come home and the house is a wreck. Or we've eaten something that we're like, ugh, I shouldn't have done that. Or our pants don't fit. I want to read you guys something. Are there any thoughts on this so far of what I just said? This idea of connecting control to separation and the opposite impacts that we want to be having in our lives. Ali says, it's bringing up so much realization. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because our minds, when we lean towards control, tell us that if people just did what we wanted to, we'd all be happy. If people just cleaned up, if my family or my children or if they just did blah, 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 this wouldn't be a problem. But actually the problem is how we show up. Our problem is the false narratives that we need a perfect house, perfect body, perfect children, perfect career before we can be loved. So why do we attempt control? It's a really, really good question. And hi there for who just hopped on. I'd love to know who you are. So just type your name into the box and say hello. You know, why do we attempt control? I'd love to know your thoughts. I have a few. Why do we need things a certain way? Ali says it's a way to feel safe. Yes. Yes. Ultimately, control comes down to trying to alleviate fear. We control so that we can feel safe, so that we can soften our fear that life is ultimately ever-changing and something that we never really have a grasp on. There's a wonderful paragraph that I want to read you from Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change by Pema Chodron. And I'm currently reading it. And it's been, I love what she says. She says, whether we're conscious of it or not, the ground is always shifting. Nothing lasts, including us. So what does it feel like to be a human in this ambiguous, groundless state? For one thing, we grab at pleasure and try to avoid pain, but despite our efforts, we're always alternating between the two. Under the illusion that experiencing constant security and well-being is the ideal state. Okay, that's huge. Under the illusion that experiencing constant security and well-being is the ideal state. How many of us have told ourselves that, you know, I want to find balance and I'm moving towards wellness and well-being. And it's like, I think that when we're lucky, we touch upon it in moments. But it's ever shifting. It's ever changing. And that's why when we have these kind of locked in ideas of what wellness looks like or what happiness looks like or what contentment looks like, and we can't always check every single box, we flip out. It's because we can't always be in that state. She says, and so when we're trying to constantly get in this ideal state of well-being, we do all sorts of things to achieve it. We overeat, or I would say we over or undereat. We overdrink or underdrink. We use drugs. We work too hard. We strive for perfection. We spend hours online watching TV. But somehow we never quite achieve the state of unwavering satisfaction we're seeking. It's not the impermanence per se, or even the knowing that we're going to die that causes our suffering, the Buddha teaches, but rather it's our resistance to the fundamental uncertainty of our situation. We seek to control and we suffer from it because of our resistance to the fundamental uncertainty of our situation. So that's why we control, because we cannot stand uncertainty. And yet that's all that life is. It's all that really life is. It's like, I have no idea what the fuck is going on. And being, learning how to be okay with that. And I say all of this does not mean that we don't have preferences. This doesn't mean that we don't take intentional action to keep a house relatively clean and do our best to take care of our bodies. It doesn't mean that we don't do things, but it means we soften our need for it to look a certain way. Because ultimately, the outcome we cannot control. I tell my clients it's about taking action without expectation. How do we take action without expectation? You know, another reason or another thing that feeds control, which is very important to know, is our shoulds. And this is a topic I talk about with my clients constantly. The shoulds, how we should be, how our house should look, how our car should smell, how how our hair should be, how our children should act, all of the shoulds. And these shoulds are both internal. They're kind of what we believe life is supposed to be like or how life should be. And then there's also the external pressure, right? For women, for everyone, I'll say for all bodies, there is an ideal of how you should look. There is a way in which you should be taking care of your body. There is a way in which you should be eating. There is a way in which you should be parenting. There's a way in which you should be experiencing your marriage or your partnership. And what these shoulds do is get us away from what we actually want. You know, when I ask my clients to check in and ask, and it's like, you know, if you didn't give a fuck, I talked about this in our last call about enoughness. You know, if you didn't give a fuck about what anyone thought, what would you do? How might that free you? And that's the way in which we actually get in touch with what we want and what matters to us outside of the shoulds. So I want to offer you that question. You know, if I didn't give a fuck about the house, what would I actually be spending my time doing? Or if I didn't believe that the house was a reflection on me, how would that make me feel? How might that free me to be more present with my children or more present with myself? How might that free me from shame? So I want you to think right now of one of your shoulds. What's one of the biggest shoulds for you that feeds your need for control? Is it around work? Is it around your physical appearance? Is it around family? What's your biggest should right now? And they change, believe me, you know, moment to moment. What's the should? And feel free to type them. Oh my gosh. Oh, Allie, I love you. Allie writes, I should be normal. Right. Can we even define normal? Can we even define normal? Because when we defined normal, then we also get to see all of our underlying shoulds and all of the underlying false narratives of what we believe normal is. The more controlling we are in our life, the more we know we're living by shoulds. Let that sink in. The more controlling we are in our life, the more we're living off of shoulds. A life lived off of shoulds is one that has to be controlled, because it takes a lot of control to live who we think we should be versus living who we are. It takes a lot of control to live who we should be versus living who we are. There might be fear in living who we are. There might be nervousness or resistance But there's no control. We don't have to control ourselves because we just are being who we are. And again, you know, how do we begin to even understand who we are outside of shoulds and outside of control? Just go back to, if I didn't give a fuck. If I didn't give a fuck, what would I say? If I didn't give a fuck, how would I dance? How would I nourish myself in this moment? What would I no longer care about? What would I have room to care about? How's all this landing? Are there any questions about what we've been talking about so far? Before I get into kind of the difference between control and care, because sometimes they can look similar. Any questions? Allie writes, I have a hard time even recognizing all of my shoulds, but I love the distinction of when we use any should, it's about control and fear. Yeah. Yes. It's such a profound realization, you know, because shoulds haunt us every second. And so when we realize that we're running off of control and fear, we then have a choice of, okay, if I don't want to be running off of control and fear, what do I want to be running off of? And this gets to the difference between control and care. So for those of you who don't know, the foundation of my work is teaching women how to trade in control for care, to feel reconnected in their lives and experience profound presence and peace and power. And one of the things that we have to begin to unravel is what's control and what's care, because often they can look really, really similar. For example, as I was saying, in my years of orthorexia, anyone would have looked at my diet and been like, she takes such good care of herself. Look at that. She doesn't eat sugar. She doesn't eat dairy. She's like, you know, her diet's perfect. And I certainly brainwashed myself to believe that that was care. But the truth was that it was control. The truth was that I was terrified of what certain foods would do to me and how they might impact my body in a negative way. And I had to get very honest with myself eventually. I'm like, you know what? This quote unquote healthy diet isn't actually very healthy for me because I am on lockdown. I'm afraid to eat anything that isn't organic. You know, same thing with exercise. You know, it's like if you work out all the time, you know, people might think like, look at her. She's taking such good care of her body. Whereas in reality, your body's like, if I need some sleep and some rest and possibly a brownie, you know, and we forget like care is not what looks good. Care is what truly feels good. And that's the difference. That's how we can begin to suss out the difference between control and care, especially when they can look very similar. Is ultimately, how am I feeling? So I just want you to think, you know, when we're controlling, how do we generally feel? And you can just type in some words. I wrote down, I feel rigid. I feel tight. There's a lot of effort to maintain. There's a lack of freedom. Danielle wrote, ironically, I feel out of control. Yeah. It's like you can't grip tight enough. That's such a brilliant. That's brilliant, Danielle, right? It's like when we are controlling, it's just never enough. It's just never enough, which can make us feel even more out of control. And then for some of us, we might even get into like, is this the right way? Am I doing this the right way? Ah, I have to lock down even more. I also wrote down accomplished, but with an icky tinge. You know, often if we're sticking to a particular way of eating or we've got our, you know, our weight, quote unquote, under control, we feel very accomplished. But there's this tinge of ickiness where we're actually terrified because what if we gain weight or what if we eat something wrong or what if our kid does blah, blah, blah. You know, it's, Allie writes, yes, it's almost like a competition. Yes. Yes. That's control. That's when we know that it's control. When we can't hold on any tighter, but we feel like we have to. And we have to win. And we have to keep it going. And we can never back down. That's control. And that piece there of competition, of accomplishment with an icky tinge, those are more, I'd call them advanced. Those are more advanced, nuanced pieces of control, but they're really important to recognize that we can make control look really shiny. Oh, I feel, look at everything I just did. I feel so good about myself. But then the fear underneath is, oh shit, now I have to keep it going. And how do I do that? Because it took so much effort. And it doesn't actually feel that good to me. And that's what care is. Care feels good. Care feels like a relief. It feels like nourishment, like a warm bath. And there can also, just so you know, be a bit of edge pushing with care too. Because we feel like we shouldn't feel so free. We shouldn't feel so relaxed. We shouldn't feel so good. We're not used to feeling good. And we can have fear around that. Has anyone ever experienced that piece of care when you are kind of in a place of you know, indulging what feels good, being uncomfortable with it, feeling like you should be doing something different? And generally, when I talk about care, Allie writes, yes, maybe it's guilt. Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah, we really like to feel guilty about taking care of ourselves. Control is much more esteemed in our culture. Know that too. Know that too, that often the activities that we do that are kind of controlling, we get praised for. We get a lot of praise for clean houses and thin bodies. We get a lot of praise for completing big projects at work or getting promotions or, you know, and none of these things are bad if they genuinely make you feel good. But if we're being honest and you're experiencing them as control, it's hard to break away from the praise. Because generally, no one's going to throw you a parade for taking care of your heart. You know, no one's gonna praise you for taking a nap when you need it. And that is both what we've learned from our families of origin, and also what we learn from our culture. There's an entire genre of literature around life hacking, right? How can you be as productive as possible in as little time as possible? Like, just even saying those words, I need a nap. So when we begin to care for ourselves, when we begin to lean towards what feels good, what feels good, what feels nourishing, what feels like a relief and a release, part of our job is to work with the guilt. Part of our job is to work with the uncomfortability that comes with care. Care is not just all relief. There is also, you know, your control's not going to give up that easily. So it's going to poke at you and make you feel guilty and shitty. It's like you feel shame if you're not controlling enough and the house isn't perfect enough. And then you feel shame for like just being like, you know, today it's going to be a wreck. It's like we never let ourselves have a moment of peace where it's all just allowed to be okay. You know, and as we begin to kind of wrap up the call, I want you to think about, you know, what's one area this month in my life where I can just, one thing in my life that I can just let it be okay, that maybe doesn't look the way it should. That I can let good enough be great. How can I let good enough be great? I once heard Elizabeth Gilbert speaking. She was talking about a novel that she had written, and she had sent it out, and a whole bunch of people came back and were like, great, 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 except this one issue with the novel. And she sat with it and sat with it and sat with it and decided, you know what? I'm just going to leave it. I'm not going to change it. I don't need to perfect this. It's a good enough novel, and I'm going to let that be great for me. And I often think back to that of when we've put in effort and we've really done a good enough job, the bravery it takes to just say, yep, and now I'm going to let this go. I don't have to keep perfecting, making sure that every little thing is exactly how it's supposed to be. I can let good enough be great. So I want to take our last, if anyone has any questions about this entire topic, you know, we're just scratching the surface, but my goal again with these care calls is just to create a sense of community and camaraderie and knowing that we are not alone in thinking about these things and feeling these things and struggling with these things. And that there are also, we have options. We have options and we have alternatives. So what I want you to kind of leave with and to work with over the next month between now and our next care call, which is October, I think it's October 10th. Let me just make sure that that's true. Yep, October 10th, is getting curious about your control. Meaning, when you feel yourself go on lockdown, when I asked, you know, what does it feel like in your body? Where is it in your body? Where is it in your mind and in your brain? When you feel that coming on, instead of either spinning in it or then moving into the action that you think you should be doing, that you've got to lock down, asking yourself this question: why does it need to be this particular way? Why does it need to be this particular way? This happened to me just yesterday. My child, I was really trying to avoid her making a huge mess. And so we ended up getting into a fight because she just wanted to make a mess with this thing. And I was like, I don't want you to make a mess. And I had to ask myself, why do I need this to be a particular way? And it's like, because if she makes a mess, then I have to clean it up. And cleanup takes time. And I was having this belief that I didn't have the time to clean up, which I actually did. I didn't want to clean it up, but I had the time to. So dropping down, and then I was like, you know what, just do it. And then the fight stopped. She made a mess. I cleaned it up. It was fine. But my need in that moment to control her and her activities, because I believed I didn't have enough time, was creating huge turmoil that I actually didn't want to have in that moment. So asking yourself, why does it need to be this particular way? You know, when you want to eat one thing, but you think you should eat another, why do I have to eat the salad over the sandwich? And get into your whys. And the more whys you ask, the more you're going to uncover, like, oh, that's an outdated belief about my body. That's an outdated belief about what healthy people do. Oh shit, that's what my mom did. You know, it all kind of begins to unravel. Number two is taking action without expectation. This is huge when it comes to control versus care. You know, can we eat in a way that nourishes our bodies without expecting it to keep us looking a certain way? Can we throw ourselves into work with positive, powerful intention and action without expecting ourselves to then get a particular outcome? Can we bravely take action without expectation? And number three is, this month, I want you to let what feels good lead. That's the primary difference between control and care. Care genuinely feels good. And can we do that? Can we let what feels good lead? And this is a big stretch for many of us. A huge stretch, because we're not used to letting what feels good lead. We're used to letting what's right lead. We have a certain way of doing it. It has to be right. It has to look this way. Because then we get praised. Then no one gives us any shit. Then we look, quote unquote, really good. Whatever we tell ourselves. So this month, let what feels good lead. And if anything comes to you, I'd love to know right now before we hop off, what's one area of your life where, you know, what would it look like to let what feels good lead? What would it look like to let what feels good lead? Allie just wrote, I worry about the repercussions. Yes. Yes. And part of that, I mean, I think that that's so valid. And there often are repercussions for letting what feels good lead. And generally it's because we have to renegotiate the terms in which we have set up in our life. Whether it's with our partners or with our children. And that's the second part of the bravery is renegotiating. I know it used to be this way, but I'm trying this new thing. I'm letting what feels good lead, and what feels good is A, B, C, and D. Let that all sit. I know I gave you guys a lot. Thank you for being here and putting your care first. I will be sending out a recording so you can listen to this. And I'd love to know, just quickly, what's your primary takeaway from this call? What's your biggest takeaway? I know that for me this month, besides working on letting what feels good lead, is also letting go of needing to get everything right, of looking right, and more just being with where I am. Allie writes, trust in myself to let what feels good lead and know it might require negotiation. Yes. Yes. You are worth renegotiating for, girl. Yes. Danielle says, loosening the grip. Yes. And one way that you can begin to do that, just physically, when you feel yourself tighten, just open your hands. Just open your hands and feel like the air and the oxygen touch the palms of your hands. That is one way that we can just start to loosen our grip. All right. I adore you guys. Until next month, enjoy. Enjoy what feels good. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.